Welcome to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight, the podcast where we uncover the secrets of CEOs, entrepreneurs, and visionaries who've used public speaking to skyrocket their businesses and their bottom line. Get ready for captivating stories, valuable insights, and practical wisdom from the trailblazers who've mastered the art of the stage. I'm your host, Kelly O'Hara, and I'm thrilled to bring you their experiences and expertise directly to you. Let's get started. You know how everyone says you should tell stories to grow your business, but nobody tells you how to actually do it in a way that doesn't sound like a cheesy TED talk or a glorified sales pitch? Me too. Today, we're calling in the big guns, the guy Hollywood studios, A-list celebrities, and multi-million dollar marketers turn to when they want stories that land. And not just land, but move people, convert audiences, and make money. If you've ever struggled to explain what you do in a way that actually sticks, or if you're tired of spinning your wheels trying to connect emotionally with your audience without sounding like you read it off a sticky note on an Instagram, then today's episode is for you, because today's guest is about to flip the script. Michael Haig is the story whisperer behind some of the Hollywood's biggest hits and some of the business world's most profitable marketing campaigns. He's a best-selling author, a world-class coach, and the man Will Smith called the best at finding what's most authentic in every moment of a story. And let's be real, when the Fresh Prince endorses you, you're doing something right. He's the author of Storytelling Made Easy, Selling Your Story in 60 Seconds, and the iconic Writing Screenplays That Sell, which is basically gospel in the screenwriting world. He's worked behind the scenes on everything from I Am Legend to The Karate Kid and the reboot to Suicide Squad. But what makes Michael such a powerhouse for entrepreneurs and public speakers is how he translates Hollywood storytelling into real world influence. He's coaching marketers, consultants, and business leaders to craft stories that don't just entertain, they convert. Today, he's pulling back the curtain on what makes a story unforgettable, the emotional journey behind every great message, and how tapping into the hero's inner journey can shift your brand, your audience, and your business forever. Michael Haig, I really want to welcome you to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight.
Oh, I'm very happy to be here. This is going to be fun, I guarantee.
I feel the same. I have loved exploring you in so many different ways, and our conversations are just golden. So this is going to be so fun to share with the audience. I love to go back, as you well know, if you've seen this podcast before, I love to go back to where it begins for our guests, because that's where the real story begins, when you get to see their path and how they got where they are and why they're so great at what they do. And I'd love for you to tell me, was there a specific moment that you realized that storytelling wasn't just what you're good at, but something that could actually change people's lives? How did this work for you?
Sure. What I'm going to do is something I often say, don't do at the beginning of a story, but I'm going to go all the way back. And I want you to picture a six-year-old boy who's walking along the sidewalk carrying a giant plastic bag that's about the same size as he is, and it's filled with popcorn. And that was me at about 6 years old, because my father had a candy store. That was his business at the time. And in the store, they made popcorn and caramel corn. It was called the Caramel Corn Shop. Back in those days, in the dark ages, this was after silent film, but not too much later. At that time, the Elsinore Theater, which was the main theater in Salem, Oregon, where I grew up, they didn't make their own popcorn like they do now. So they would have, my father would pop the popcorn that they would sell that night and then take it over and they would sell it and they had warm it up. So that means I got to carry this bag of popcorn, if I wanted to, down to the theater. And the reason I wanted to is it got me into the movie for free. And the only thing is, my dad said, he was very shy about it. So he said, don't let anybody see you go into the movie theater when you bring it. because we don't want them to know you got in free. So I never got to see the credits of any movies when I was a little kid. But what happened then, I realized, especially looking back, is I loved from the beginning the movies. And what I wanted more than anything was to be in the movie. Now, I don't mean I wanted to be in the movies. I didn't even think about there being a business. I just wanted to be transported into the world that the movie was creating.
Oh, yes, and, I agree. And oh, yes.
That is the number one thing that any speaker, storyteller, whether it's on the page or on the stage or on a screen or whatever, that's what you need to be able to do with your story. You need to transport the people hearing or reading your story into the world you've created so they become a part of the story, and especially so they become the hero of that story and experience what's happening in the story through that character. And so that formative thing. Now, did I immediately jump into moving to Hollywood and becoming or getting into the movie business? Absolutely not. First of all, that just seemed, when I figured out there is a business and there was such a thing as somebody who directed the movie and wrote the movie and so on, that just seemed like a pipe dream. Nobody does that really, move to Hollywood to get into it. And it certainly wouldn't have been something I had the courage or wherewithal to do. So I spent a lot of time doing other things. I got a master's degree in education. I taught school for 5 years. And then I was between those jobs, or after that ended, a friend gave me an opportunity to work for their company in Phoenix. And I was doing something there just because it was fun to be working with my friend. And I realized, look, at some point, it's time to take action, to just get off the pot and do this. And because I was dating a woman who was moving to LA, that gave me enough of an excuse that this is my time, I better do it. What I'm trying to convey is there was so little courage involved in any of this, because everything had to line up. So I ran out of sort of subconscious objections, and I thought, give it a shot. So I went in and fell off the turnip truck in LA, found a film school, this little school that had no grades, no credits, which is fine. I'd done all that before. It just, you paid to learn how to do things in the movie business. And the class that I landed in that really connect was called story analysis. And the job in Hollywood is called being a reader. And so I was good at that, and I made about 50 cold calls until I found an agent who said, I don't care where you've been or what you've done. I'm going to give you a script. You're going to read it and do a synopsis of it. That's what cover is. It's just a synopsis and a recommendation. And if I like what you did, I'll give you the job. And so the first job I had was as a reader in Hollywood reading scripts, which I thought was fantastic. I thought, yeah, I made it, because somebody was going to pay me to give my opinion about a movie, in this case, in script form, something I'd been doing to my friends and family my whole life, which they got very tired of, is all my opinions. And I thought, I didn't think I'd made it, but I thought, this is so cool that somebody would want to do that. And the job paid $10 a script. And it took about a day to read and write a synopsis of the script. So basically, I'm pulling down $10 a day. Now, this was back in 1975. Even then, $10 a day is not going to pay the rent. And I just picture my poor dad, who was very supportive, but I know he thought, you could have stayed in teaching, and instead you're going to throw it all to make $10 a day in Hollywood. But he was nice about it. He supported me. But that was the beginning. And then that started me on the road to getting involved in script and story and Hollywood and working there. And I'll share one more thing. I don't want to make the whole interview about this, but one more thing that I realize now was critical, because we figure things out about our history after we've done it. You're never in the middle and think this is a watershed moment, not usually. But the first time I went into this agent and I was picking up my first stack of scripts, there was no internet there. You had to read the script on paper. And I got about the first five scripts and I said something like, I hope one of these is worth recommending. And he said, yeah, don't get your hopes up. you'll be lucky if you can find one good script out of 100. And I thought, this guy's such a sourpuss. I said, if somebody goes to all the script, all the work of writing a script,
yeah,
they must
writing.
Have seen a lot of movies. And so it's got to, something's got to be good. And I found out he was being generous. I mean, I read 100 scripts and I read another 100 scripts and I still hadn't found one that was worth recommending.
Oh.
But I didn't care. I was still getting to do it. I loved doing it. But I started thinking, what's the difference? Why is it that the movies I see in theaters at least are passable and some of them are great and none of these scripts is working? And so I started figuring out what makes the good script work. What is it that makes that a success and these other ones aren't doing? And that became that was really the foundation of everything I've done since. When I'm, even if I'm coaching entrepreneurs or speaking from stage and so on, it's really, what's the difference? What's the difference between a story that falls flat and a story that gets people, first of all, emotionally involved and then inspires them to change or take some action or really at least just changes their life momentarily? And the more I learned about that, the more I was able to share it. And here I am.
Well, first of all, I love your story. And I got to say that it's so great as someone that is standing back and getting to hear it, is that you were just so open to what was presented in front of you that you just said, okay, sure, I'll try that. Oh, okay, yeah. That sounds fun. And I think that openness is, I think it's worth commenting on that. I really do believe the universe leads you. I really do. You just most of the time aren't paying attention. A lot of people just aren't paying attention. And you get these little hints along the way. And if people don't put it together, it comes to you in such beautiful little synchronistic ways. And I sometimes feel that people are missing it. If you're not paying attention, that's really the clue here, is paying attention and showing up. Paying attention and showing up. Those are two real components. And your story kind of illustrates that so well, is that an opportunity comes up and you go, yeah, okay. It doesn't have to be the big end all, ooh, this is the one that's arrived. It's, oh, I got nothing to lose. I'll give this a try. $10 an hour. At least like reading scripts. And then you find the little thing that is your thing that you wouldn't have known if you hadn't gotten that job. So anyway, I always think people's journey is so fascinating. I get the greatest guests in the world. And I absolutely feel so honored that they share how they got where they are today, because I think it lets people know this is all human. Nobody's got some special crown of why they're magical. They got there because they were paying attention and they found their gifts amongst the opportunities that came their way. And you certainly qualify for that. But now I want to go back to what you said about story analysis. And was there a unifying theme that you discovered about why a story falls flat and then why the hero's journey is such, you know, it creates transformation, it creates movement, it creates conversion? What is there a unifying theme in that, or is there something that you can say, this is why, like in the movie business, here's an example. This is one you could address. They always say that there are four characters in every movie, that you have to have those four characters, those representations of those four different types of people to meet the universal audience, because everybody is different that watches this movie and they have to be able to identify with at least one of these four characters that have similar challenges, attributes, gifts, whatever. Have you heard that before?
Probably. I also talk about four character types. If you follow Joseph Campbell, he talks about archetypes and there are far many more. But what I identified is there are four key characters, certainly. But there's only one that is the essential character, and that's what I call the hero. And if I talk about hero, first thing I should clarify is I don't by the word hero mean someone who is heroic. In fact, much more often, I'll take a little side trip with this too, but much more often, the character is an ordinary person It's not about someone who is heroic at the beginning of the story, but most of the time, the story is about how that person becomes heroic as they're pursuing whatever their goal is. And since we're talking a lot about speaking, this is, I'll give a piece of advice or something that stops a lot of people from even becoming public speakers, or leads them to believe this myth that I'm nobody special. No one would want to hear what I have to say. A lot of people are scared of speaking because they think that's it. I'm not heroic. And they hear speeches about someone who's done some monumental thing, an astronaut who's gone somewhere, somebody climbed a mountain even though they were disabled or whatever it might be. And most of us don't have those experiences. We don't do that earth-shaking event. And so we think, I couldn't compete with that one. But what you have to understand is that if anything could work against you, the thing that makes you a great speaker is because you are ordinary, because that creates empathy. And one of the key elements is, I'm sidetracking, I'm going to get to your question. It's not the most important thing, but one of the things that makes you of value as a speaker, if you, like, I just told this story and there's nothing really special about the story. It was just what happened to me and how I did. But being an everyday person, and it allows the audience to feel, okay, that person is like me, because I don't feel that special to begin with either. And that's what you need. Your audience has to empathize with you so they become you or become the hero of the story you're telling, because that person is empathetic, because that person is either the victim of some undeserved misfortune, or that character is in jeopardy of losing something important, or maybe just because that character is stuck and they're living small, they're tolerating some situation, but it's just not allowing them to move forward and live fully. Okay. So the hero is that ordinary character, that character has recognizable flaws or fears or problems or situations, and then their journey to accomplish something that required them to become courageous, become heroic as they go after what they want. Sorry, I get pedantic about this, but the thing you said, the main thing, the underlying thing is, a story must have a hero that we empathize with and that we can subconsciously become, so we're participating in the story, and not because it's interesting.
That is such a beautiful point to make. As you were sharing that, I was thinking, when you see these superheroes, you brought up the big superhero guy, the heroic guy that from the beginning, you don't really care about him. You might notice him, he's got special powers or whatever, but you don't really empathize with him until you see what his challenge is, what he's up against, and the thing he's scared of, or the thing he can't accomplish yet, or where his heart is. That's when you start to get attached to him. I'm right in the third season of Witcher for Netflix. And here's this sexy hot guy who is, he's smoldering, and he's got great skills and talents and everything else. But it's the suffering, the things that have almost broken him that make him so tantalizing. And you want it all to work out well for him because you see what he's going through that's really tough. It's not the fact that he's got all these magical fight powers and sexy guy. Yeah.
And one of the things you'll see, now I'm sorry, I haven't watched Witcher. Maybe I will now. No one else really has recommended it to me, but I would. But take the Marvel Universe or the DC Universe, those superheroes, every one of them that I can think of that became all of the Avengers, for instance, they all have an origin story. And it's, so take Spider-Man, the most successful Marvel character ever and by many. Who is he? He's not a guy who can swing on with some sort of spider line and go through New York. He's a schlubby, shy, doofus high school kid who longs for the girl next door, but is not courageous enough to go after them. He's going to high school. Pretty much all of us have had that experience. He's just an everyday person until he gets bit by the spider. And it's essential to know that. It's not essential. You'll see superheroes that don't, but they're not the most successful superheroes. We know
Yeah,
who
you just
created the
wouldn't
Hulk.
care.
We know where Captain America was. Who is he? The Captain America started out as the spindliest soldier, couldn't do anything. He was like the 97-pound weakling or whatever. Because then we connect with them because they're like us. Then something happens and it's going to give them some new situation, new opportunity that they are going to have to take action on. So it doesn't have to be a superhero. When you're telling any story, after you create a setup and create the hero of your story, whether it's you, it could be autobiographical, it could be, I strongly recommend speakers have success stories about people they've helped. Okay. So you introduce that person as an everyday character, but then there has to be some tipping point, some crisis, something that is going to move them out of this state of inertia, perhaps, or a state where they're tolerating something, or they might even think things are going great. One of the guests you had that I listened to the podcast was Amber Gage. Okay. I'm not good with names, but I remember the story. And she told a story about how she was flying high. She had just gotten this job with somebody she admired, and she turned that person's business around. Okay. Not knowing, because heroes sometimes don't know that they're stuck, not knowing that something was going to happen. She was going to get canned after making them $10 million or whatever it was. And now she was going to be broke and not know what to do. That was the tipping point. That was the crisis she faced. And then in your interview with her, she went on and told the story about how that's what changed everything, that crisis. So she was starting out as an everyday person who felt like, I've got the world by the tail here. And then it crashed and burned. I don't even know if I've answered your question because I get into it. But what we're talking about here is really what is in some ways the foundation of the story, and that is structuring the story. How do you lay it out?
I absolutely love this. I think this is essential to all of those entrepreneurs out there like myself and to speakers who want to up their game and be more interesting. How to set yourself apart from everybody else when you do similar things to everybody else. How do you do this? And the story often is the thing that makes a difference. It makes people feel. But let me ask you, before we jump into that, because I want to talk about the mechanics, because I feel that's what is so helpful, that people get actionable steps. But at the same time, I want to also talk about you, because you've made a name for yourself, truly, in two really high stakes arenas between film and business. And I'd like to know, what was the moment that you decided? What's your story about how you made the leap from Hollywood to entrepreneurship and helping people in business?
Okay, I'll answer it this way. And because this to me, after all these years, this is to me my secret of what has led me to where I am, and also points out all the setbacks and pretty, maybe not all the problems, but all the things I did wrong and so on. And that is, I realized that everything that has ever moved my career forward in any significant way, anything I did, like you said, to make a name for myself, is because I did something that I thought was fun. That's like it. And I don't know how, I hope it's good advice, but I want you to at least be aware of it, because I'll give you, when I started in Hollywood, here's one thing. That was the first place I heard, and you hear it all the time. You've got to network. Oh, you've got to network. And that's true. You've got to make connections and so on. But so I would do all these things people said I needed to do. I go to parties or mixers or whatever. And I'm an introvert who hates parties. I was never any good at that. Or you'll present yourself in certain ways, or you'll go after it this way and so on. And none of that was any fun. But I'll give you an example from that. I hope I'm sticking with your questions. I'm not real good. I tend to meander. I'm all about story, but story is about taking meandering and structuring it so it does become good. But here's one of the key turning points for me, one of the biggest ones. I was already speaking because I had to start. I wanted to teach people about screenwriting, So I was giving presentations and I'd written my first book and so on. And I got to be friends with a person you may know of called Christopher Vogler. And he wrote a book called The Writer's Journey. Great book, because he was pretty much the person who brought the Joseph Campbell Hero with a Thousand Faces ideas and the hero's journey ideas into the film industry with a memo he wrote and then a book and so on. So he and I became friends because we were both lecturing about screenwriting and so on. And I said to him, we should do something together. And he agreed it would be fun. It'd be fun because we were at the same conferences and we liked each other and we respected each other. So I said, why don't we do a presentation? And I said, now you're all about the Joseph Campbell approach and the hero's journey. What I'm really interested in is going deeper into character and what their psychology is and how they need to transform. So I said, why don't we call this lecture The Hero's Two Journeys? And we would split. He would talk about his, we'd take turns, and then we'd get together on stage, and we did it. And with an inspiration I don't usually have, at the last minute, like the week before we were doing it, I thought to myself, we should probably record this and do a video. So I found somebody who said she knew how to do a video, and we made a video of this. And then I didn't know what to do with it, but somebody found me or heard about it. And they said, I know how to turn this into a video that you could market. And I said, sure. Because I didn't know what to do. And that became this video, and there were video and audio versions still, called The Hero's Two Journeys. Okay, I did that solely because it was fun. Never did I think we're going to make a bundle with this or this is going to change our lives. It just seemed fun. And it was three years after that, I get a phone call from this woman. She said, my name's Tracy and I work with Will Smith. And he wants to know if you'd work with him. You'd give him your feedback on a movie he's right now making in Canada called I Am Legend. And I said, I think I can find the time. But I said, and so we set up the meeting and I said, how does Will Smith even know who I am? And she said, I know he's had your book a long time, but he saw this video you did called The Hero's Two Journeys. And he loved what you said about the inner journey and the transformation from identity to essence. So he wanted to talk to you. And that started about a 10-year span where I helped him. And then eventually he put me on retainer with his company and I coached not just on to give feedback, not just on his scripts, the ones he was starring in, but other films and so on. And that changed my life because not only in Hollywood, but once I got into the way I got into the entrepreneurial space and businesses, people outside Hollywood started seeing that video and they wanted me to help them with their stories. I'll tell another story about that later if you want. But that idea, like, how did I get there? It was the things that I thought would be fun. And the things I find fun around story is movies and what I learned from working with movie makers and screenwriters and so on, and then applying that. As you can probably tell, because I do get carried away, but I'm having so much fun right now. I love talking about story. I love talking about movies, and I love guiding people and helping people make their stories more emotionally involving, because my experience, what I discovered early on when I got out of Hollywood with entrepreneurs and business leaders is almost without exception, what their primary goal is to help people live better. They want to help. So anyway, take that for what it's worth. But my advice is always honor and stay with the things that are fun for you. And you can do the other things as much as you need to. But really, if you focus on those, because it's always that has been something that moved me forward in my career.
1,000%. I cannot agree with you more. I was very lucky to have parents that they weren't together. They were divorced. But each of them, my stepdad too, they loved what they did. They were just on fire about it. They had done it for free if they needed to, because it was just, my dad was in sports. My mom was interesting in marketing and gaming and different things. I ended up by fluke I would get an invitation, and it was the same thing for me. I thought I would get asked to do something, and I would think, well, that sounds fun. I'll just give it a try. I've never done it before, but it'll be interesting. And every time it turned out to be the best thing that it could have been, because I got a lot out of it. I learned a lot, found out what I like to do, found out what I don't like to do. I work with a guy that is one of the most incredible people I've ever known. He's like the Pied Piper of AI. He is so into, and I'm going to compare this with you as well, is that when you find someone who is so excited about what they do, it's almost contagious. And the fact that he has gotten me into AI to the level that I am, where I am an absolute tech voidant person. I don't like dealing. That's the last thing I want to do is be dealing with tech. And this man has turned me on to what is entirely a whole new world that's so cutting edge, that's so far ahead of what anybody's doing. And it was because he was so excited about it. And you have the same thing about storytelling. Those are the people I'm so excited that I've been able to bring people to the show that are so thrilled about what they do. And the sign for everyone out there listening is he couldn't be giving a better message about find what's fun. There'll be some tedious things you have to do to run that part of the business. But if you can find people to do that for you, that's great. But do what sets your hair on fire. And all of us have had that experience of taking on something new, loving it, and then finding out it's not the right thing. And how long should you stay in that? Not long. And I have had that experience of loving what I was doing for years. And then all of a sudden, the game changed, the management changed, the whatever that experience is where you go, whoa, now I'm not enjoying this anymore as much anymore or at all. But the paycheck has you tied. You're making way too much money doing something you don't want to do, but it's hard to make that transition. And the price is so high for that. Whether it's so high when you're not doing what brings you joy, because the joy was the thing you were supposed to bring to the world. Your joy changes the world. The way you talk about storytelling. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I'm catching the wave. So that's just a little sideline on my part, but I wanted to share that it's so beautiful when what comes up in these conversations about what's most important and having fun doing what you're doing. And storytelling, if you have the basic structure, can be fun. You're telling a story about your business or your mission or who you are. What better thing is there to be doing?
Yeah, I love that you just said, because that's one of the things, public speaking, and I've heard you say it on other podcasts and we hear it all the time, is it's terrifying when you first start doing that. And that's true. I was a bit less terrified because it was gradual for me. And I had taught, but I taught Head Start. So it wasn't quite as scary, the same thing. But here's the thing. I think when you're thinking about getting on stage, if it's early in your speaking endeavor, first of all, stop saying you shouldn't be afraid or you shouldn't be nervous, because you will be. You just got to say that's it. But two things to remember. One is and I've heard you say this too, nobody in the audience, and I'll ask you for yourself, have you ever gone to a lecture, you sat down, or a presentation or a speech where you're in the audience and your main thought was, I hope this person really screws up?
Never.
Because first of all, we're generally kinder than that. You don't want that, but we're there because we're wondering what's in this for me. So we want
exactly.
What it is. And if you screw up, now remember the idea of getting empathy for it as a story. That makes you empathetic. It's like, oh, you're nervous, or you dropped the phone, or the one guest, Kenneth, he said he had a crying baby. He couldn't get his water and there was noise going on and it was all disaster. But when you face that, we're going to feel like, well, I'm glad it's not me up there, and they're sympathetic. But the other thing is, think about not all that hazari around speaking and you're nervous. Of course you are. But it's, you are there to impart to people some expertise, something, some experience you've had or some knowledge you have or technique you have. And I hope that the reason you have that expertise is because you really love what you do. You have found. And so if you think the fun of it is not the nervousness, the fun of it is you get to share something that you find fun with other people, and it will help them live better. And if you look at it that way, it doesn't make it less nervous. You got to let go of that worry about it being nervous. It makes it more fun to be there. And then once you have enough fun, then you'll find out, okay, the more you do something, the less nervous you get about it until it's secondhand. And then you just become overly talkative like I am and going off in lots of tangents.
You know what? I think this is a really good time to talk about another subject that you and I hold very dear is when you talk about speaking, a lot of people out there just freeze up by just that phrase alone, because it is statistically proven that the majority of people, the top two fears in the world are dying and doing public speaking. And not to say that one is actually higher than the other. Most, yes, dying might be a little bit more scary, but honestly, there are people absolutely terrified about speaking. And that is a reasonable fear. And if you add to it, being an introvert, I am one as well. And the people listening might find that fascinating, because I don't come off that way, but it's absolutely true. I just had to overcome some of it, or I had to develop a skill set, because I kept choosing big projects that would require, even when I started the project, I don't think I thought it through that there was going to be television involved, or there was going to be celebrities and interviews and speeches. And I ended up forced that I'm going to have to do this. So I'm going to have to figure out how to make friends with this side. But we touched on something before in our prior conversation that I think is probably really good for this audience, that if you are shy or you just don't enjoy it, the story of the cocktail party is one of my favorites, because you and I would avoid a party at all costs. That's the worst thing, is being invited to a party. And I want to share something with the audience. I don't think I've shared this yet, and I don't want to take credit for it, because I heard it online and I thought, oh my gosh, that is my life. But tell me how you feel about this, Michael. I heard a speaker once. I wish I could remember her name, but she was speaking about the experience of an introvert being invited to a party. And on Tuesday, she gets invited to the party and she says, oh, I really like the person who invited me. They're a friend of mine. Okay, that sounds good. And on Wednesday, you start thinking, okay, what am I going to wear to the party? And what time does it start? And okay, I'll prep. By Thursday, you're going, why did I say yes to this? This is the last thing I want to do. I'm not excited about this, but I said I'd do it. By Friday, you're like, how do I get out of this? Can I call in dead? Can I come up with, am I feeling sick? I think I'm getting a sore throat. Whatever it is, Saturday comes, you can't turn it back. You've already said you'd do it. You're a person of your word. You said you'd be there. You got to be there by 5 o'clock. And now you got a million things to do. You got to clean the house. You got to run to the cleaners. You got to take the dog to the vet. You got to sew a quilt. There's a million things you need to do before you go to this party. And you're lining them up and they're taking longer and longer. Now it's time, you're stuck. It's a friend of yours. You got to show up at the party and you're dreading it. You're dressed. You show up. The door opens. The light goes on. You are on. And the gist of this story is, you get into the party, your defense mechanism, mine is, I put all the attention on all the other guests. I'm not there to share what's going on with me. I'm there to take care of everybody else. I put the attention on them. I don't want the attention. I put all the attention on them. I know by the time I leave this party that I know who they are, what they do for a living, how their kids are, what their health, anything that's important to them, I've heard, and they were happy to tell me, because they were all extroverts. And the introverts are so appreciative of being seen because I see them. But at the end of the party, it is so exhausting that the next day you're in bed, or you are having to regroup and rejuvenate. And you were sharing a story similar to that. And I would love it for you to share, because I want the audience to know that being a speaker is, you don't have to be an extrovert to do it. But this experience really landed for me of, yeah, that's what it's like. You still have to overcome that. But that may not ever go away. I've been speaking for years. I help people with their speaking careers. I've certainly been out there a million times. That hasn't changed. The Sunday, the day after, man, I'm on downtime. I don't want to talk to anybody. I'm not on the phone. I'm with my animals and with my husband. I'm in the garden, whatever. But you have to rejuvenate. Tell me what your experience is. Even though you're a famous storyteller and you're in the film business and you help entrepreneurs, what's it been for you?
Very similar. I think you've mastered it better than I have. What I said to you when we had our pre-talk was, there are two kinds of groups I like, that I enjoy, a group to be in. One is a group of six people or less, because then it can be then you get to really have a conversation where you're not just jumping from one. And by the way, I don't know if you have this, but whenever I'm in a party or a bigger group and I get caught, because it feels like being trapped, talking to somebody, you'll overhear another conversation. And it always sounds, geez, I wish I was talking to those people, because that sounds a lot more fun than this conversation. But we should cut this out, because this is giving away secrets that make us look bad. But I like a group of six or fewer, then you can have a more intimate conversation and you're not all talking over each other and so on. So I like conversations like this, because we're just bouncing ideas. The other group I like is 100 people or more who are watching me on the stage, which doesn't sound introverted, I know, but that's because, as I said, that's fun for me, because it's me talking and talking about movies and stories, which is what I love. Don't get to do that in a party, because you can't just say, let me tell you about the latest movie I saw. But the other thing is, the best definition I ever heard of introversion versus extroversion is, introverts charge their batteries by being alone, and extroverts charge their batteries by being with other people. So our batteries are drained. When I'm invited to go, say, travel somewhere for a weekend, and they say, well, when you first arrive, we want to take you to dinner before you have the talk. And I used to do that because I felt like I had to say yes. And pretty soon I said, no, can't do that. I've got to get ready for the speech. I'm not really preparing for the speech. I'm just being alone, because I'll be drained if I don't. And after it's all over, there's about an hour of glow after you've done it, because you think, wow, well, they like you, or people are saying they enjoyed you, and so on. And then by the time I get back to my hotel room, I'm exhausted. Then I want to watch TV, maybe see a movie. And that's
I love it. I love that you say that. Not everybody feels that way, and there are people super comfortable and they get charged up by it, but it's great to share that conversation for those out there that have that similar experience, is that the energy is, you're putting out a lot of energy and you need to recoup in the way that serves you.
Yeah. It was the antithesis of all the people I've probably ever known, the antithesis of being an introvert. The absolute extrovert is Will Smith.
Oh, yes.
He never runs out of energy. I saw him once when they were shooting a Men in Black 3, and I happened to be in New York, and I went, or at a premiere too, although he's a little more on show there. And they were shooting this scene from Men in Black at the Brooklyn Bridge underneath it or something like that. And he was going to have to go on. And there were other actors that I knew were there, and they were like hiding. They were getting in centered. He stopped and he went to a crowd and talked to all the people in the crowd, because that pumps him up. That's how he gets his energy. And good for him. He's partying now. And who's much of an introvert, because I've coached her and got to know her too, and that's Jada Pinkett Smith. She's the antithesis. She's much more in herself. Now, she does very outgoing things. She has a show and she acts and so on. But whatever you are, don't fight against it. Just use it. But
it is what it is, isn't it? They say, I tell speakers, you know, these movie stars that, you know, you've had exposure to or that you admire, and they're so good on a set. They'll get on a set and they're really good because they own the space. They're the star of the movie and they own it. But they're actually really quiet outside of that space. And if you put them at the Academy Awards, where they want to win the greatest award in their business, there are barf buckets in the back off stage for people that this is the most terrifying experience in the world for them. And they're the biggest stars in the world. You would just not even know that they're backstage scared to death to get in front of all of their colleagues and the people they admire. I mean, it's not everybody, but it's interesting how it plays out, that some people get energy where they get their energy and where they refill their energy. You just have to take that in consideration and kind of honor the process.
Yeah. And also, I know this is geared a lot toward people who are public speakers or want to be, but one thing you can also keep in mind is you don't have to do it. It's a valuable thing, but you don't have to. What you need to do is the thing that turns you on. It's whatever your gift is that you can share. You can share your gift. It might be that getting on stage is hard, but you could do it in a situation like this, because this feels to us like one-on-one, even though as you're watching this, hopefully you're watching it with 1,000 other people or however many people tune in. Or you can write. You can do it through a book or a presentation or through your blog, or just do it one-on-one as a coach. Because it's like I was saying about networking. Finally, I just decided in Hollywood, not my thing. And I managed to meet people because I was working with them or whatever. So don't get caught up in the should of it. Okay.
Yeah.
Just look at it as another opportunity to share your gift with the world or with a group of people. And if you allow yourself to do it a few times, it'll get easier and you'll probably have more fun with it. And if you do it a few times and you just say, I don't want to anymore, that's okay.
It is okay.
Because my principle is you got to have fun.
I think that's a perfect principle. My dad would agree with you 1,000%. I can hear him coming through the screen as well. Is that, hey, life is supposed to be fun. It's work hard, play hard, but be sure that you're having fun, because that fun is your joy and that joy changes the world. So it sounds simplistic, but really, when you listen to someone who's so on fire about what they do, it's not just engaging, it inspires you in whatever your avenue is. I'm so thrilled that you're here. So listen, you write these great books, Storytelling Made Easy, and writing screenplays that sell, and selling your story in 60 minutes. I mean, these are powerful books. For those people, especially in the business world, a lot of the people I'm sure that are out there listening may not be in the film business, the TV business. They're in the business, right, and they're needing to craft their brand story. And I think your books are powerful for that. We're going to talk about that. But tell me, where do they usually go wrong? Where is the, when you see people out there putting their brand story together, where are they usually going wrong?
Okay. I mentioned, first of all, the first big mistake is to start believing that you don't belong or no one will care about your story. Or sometimes the adjunct to that, because this is, I'll explain what I mean by this in a second, but it's your identity talking. It's your protector, the part of you that wants to keep you from taking risk. And it'll convince you nobody wanted you. It's that voice that says, nobody wanted to hear from me. I'm nobody special. Or I'm terrible at storytelling. A good friend of mine who's a top level speaker and speaking coach, Patricia Fripp, says when she hears somebody say that to her about someone saying, I'm no good at speaking, she says, no, you're not bad at it. You're just untrained. And she's a brilliant coach for speaking. Okay, so that's the first mistake, keeping yourself from sharing a story. But as you're telling the story, the first or the biggest weakness that shows up in the story, I think, is it meanders. It's too unfocused. It goes in a multitude of different directions. It's complicated. And the solution to that is it needs to be simple. A simple, a good story, first of all, a good story is not a life story. Even if it's an origin story, as it's known, it's not a beginning to end biography. That's deadly. A story is about a character, a hero, which could be you, if it's something that happened to you, or it could be someone you worked with, if you're telling the story of someone you guided. And because your audience will empathize with the person you help, because you're helping the audience with the same thing. Whichever kind it is, a story is about a hero who has one specific goal to accomplish. And all the story is, it's them going on basically through six steps, is the way I look at it. Six steps between where they were before they had that desire to where they are after they've achieved it. So it's really just that. It's what did this character want And how did they accomplish it in spite of the obstacles they had to overcome? And so if you're not clear on what was the goal that you had in that moment, or what were you going or your client going after that you helped them achieve, if it's just this happened and then this happened, then it's unfocused, it's all fuzzy, and we don't know where we're going. We don't know what we're rooting for. Because if you think about movies, which is my model for everything, movies are always, Hollywood movies are almost always going to be about heroes who have a goal. They have to stop the serial killer. They have to stop the alien invasion. They have to win the love of the guy of their dreams. They have to lead the team to the state championship in football, whatever it is. Or a story about someone who wants to give a speech. Not a single story about someone who became a great speaker and went through all of these different speeches. Yeah, it's like, what was the first speech? How did you do that? When you were talking to Kenneth, you asked, he had a really good story about the first time he spoke. And so that's the thing. And that's what structure is. It's figuring out what's the goal and what are the steps. What's the sequence of events that will lead that character to that goal? And then another addition to that is the story does not transport the audience, meaning it's not vivid. The story is devoid of description and dialogue, for example. If the audience can picture what somebody's doing in a particular thing, or the goal will be something very broad and fuzzy. This is my story about how I became successful, or my goal was to be appreciated, or a person wants to be wealthy. That doesn't create images. I'll give you a quick example that I love to use, and that is, as opposed to a story, let's say it's a story about someone who's a health professional. And they have a process or a product or a supplement or something that would help people who have arthritis. And so they're tempted to, the story they might tell is there was this person and they had arthritis and they really wanted to get over or overcome their arthritis. And so they used the supplement, and in the end, they were much better. They got rid of it or something like that. It doesn't work for a number of reasons, but the main thing is it's just vague. It isn't vivid. If you were that person with that supplement and you could tell a story about, this is about a guy who had crippling arthritis. And one day his daughter came to him and said, I'm engaged. The wedding is in 6 months and I want you to walk me down the aisle. And he couldn't do it because he hated the thought of doing it because it would be embarrassing or couldn't actually walk or whatever it was. And then he started using the process or the supplement. And then the climax of the story is he's walking his daughter down the aisle. And I swear, everybody that's watching this or listening to this, including you, Kelly, you were picturing a guy walking his daughter down the aisle. And that meant you were there. Stop thinking about me or how I'm telling the story. You're just thinking, oh yeah, walking down the aisle. And it has so much more power because it's specific and it's vivid.
I think this is that's such a perfect story. I will not forget that. Let me ask you, I want to know six. So you brought up six steps. Yeah. Of course, I have to ask you, why six? And how does that play against the four pillars of every great story? Tell me how those are kind of juxtapositioned.
Okay.
What's the difference?
The six steps, this is my approach to structure. And it grows out of the approach to structure that I came up with and developed in Hollywood. And when I'm lecturing or coaching screenwriters or filmmakers, I talk about six stages to a story and five turning points. But if I'm coaching you as a speaker or as telling business stories or entrepreneurial stories or whatever, you don't have 2 hours like a Hollywood movie does. You got maybe 8 minutes at the top. So yeah, to start getting caught up in stages and turning points, I want to make it much more simple. So I just said there are six steps. And I'll share them now. And they're simple. As long as you hit these six beats, you're going to be in the top 10% of storytellers without question. Okay.
Awesome.
Yep. Yeah. I like to promise a lot. Let's see if I can overdeliver. Okay. So step one is what I call the setup. I've been talking about that several times, and that is you must show a scene, open with a scene or an event, or get us to picture the hero of your story. You have to introduce the hero right away. And you need to show that character living her everyday life before she starts pursuing anything. It's like you say to the audience, okay, this is who this character was yesterday, and probably the day before, and the day before, and the day before. Okay. So, person who has arthritis, you paint a picture of what their life is like. Internet marketers, I work with a lot of them, and they always, if you dig deep, you usually find that the main reason they want to be internet marketers is they don't want to have to work for a boss. They want to be independent. They want to make a lot of money, and they want to be able to be free to spend as much time as possible with their family. Those are the things. The origin story for a lot of internet marketers is they were in a job that they hated. Okay. So instead of just saying, I was in a job I hated, create a picture. That's the setup. So let us, a lot of times I say, if you're in an office job, let us see you in your office. What did you hate about it? I was overworked, had to stay late. Okay. Then show you're sitting at a desk piled with memos or ledgers or whatever you were piled with, but picture you in that negative situation, because the negative part of it creates that empathy. Okay, that's step one. Step two is a crisis. And the crisis, or sometimes I call it an opportunity, or sometimes I say the tipping point, but something happened, if you're talking about something happened to you that made you decide, that put you in a new situation. The source you to decide, okay, I've got to solve this problem. So it might be, if you're a marketer, you're in a miserable job. Finally, it was the day that you got chewed out by your boss one time too many. Or maybe you lost that job. Or maybe you were given a health diagnosis and it's about how you overcame some problem you had there. But something tipped for you. And this is a hard one because we don't really think about the past in that way. We'll say, I was unhappy and then finally, I decided I had to stop that job, and so I went after a new one. But again, it's not specific. It's not vivid. You remember the story I told you, and I didn't even really think about it when I said it, but I said how I came to Hollywood, and I said, but I had a girlfriend at the time, and she was moving. That was the crisis, or that was the opportunity. That was the tipping point when I said, and so I finally realized I better do this thing that I dreamed of. Okay, so if something happened to you, and then And in response, you had to figure out, okay, now what am I going to do? I just lost my job. Now what am I going to do? And that was, and I'm picking on, I listened to both of these before being on there. I love both of their interviews and their stories. But Amber said the crisis was she got fired. She lost that job where she just made the guy millions of dollars. And she said, so now we were eating, I think she said, cornbread and beans or something like that. She had but it was very vivid. And then she figured out, I got to figure out, what am I going to do? That's step two. Something happened, you decide I got to do something. And in a response, you established a goal. And when you tell the story, the goal needs to be as vivid and specific as you can. If all you were after was money, then say, and I thought, and I've coach people that made it this in a lot of ways. Truly, I said, how much money did you need to be able to make your mortgage? And they said, I had to make $10,000 in a month. I said, that's your goal. Not your goal is I wanted to be wealthy or I wanted to be safe or whatever. It's specific. So now you establish that goal. Step three and four are pursuit and conflict. Pursuit is, what are the steps that you or your hero took to achieve the goal? Now, don't list everything. Just list one or two steps. If you're talking about a client you worked with, don't say everything you have them do. Say, and so with my advice, one of the things they did was they made a list of all the people who might be good contacts. I just made that up. But whatever it is, we don't want to know your whole process if you're giving us a success story, but we want to have some sense of what we would be experiencing if we worked with you. So say that the client you had did this. Now, this is an aside, but I'll put this in. If you're telling a story about someone else you helped, don't make yourself the hero. You're the guide. You're the reflection character, I call it. You're the helper. Make sure they don't say, "And I told them this, and I told them this, and they did this." Say, just that people know you were helping them. Say, they made this list. They made these phone calls. They started learning AI, whatever it might be. So pursuit, but conflict. What were the obstacles that you faced in pursuing your goal? Even your client. How was your process when they were doing it hard for them? What did they have to overcome? Because your goal with a story, I know I've given you three goals, but one of them is to make it as emotional as possible. Emotion grows out of conflict, not desire and not success. You want to be a success, but it's the obstacles we face that make our stories more involving. Because it's like in movies, it's the showdown, it's the car chase. The things that are emotional are the obstacles, the things standing between the two lovers that become important. So what are the steps? What are the obstacles? One or two that seemed impossible to overcome, but somehow you helped them or you were able to do that. Okay. I didn't dwell a lot on the obstacles, but I said when I got my first job, first of all, I wasn't going to read anything good, but also I was only making $10 a day. Now, I didn't really say, so I overcame that, but I said that led to, you know, more jobs, or if I'd gone that direction, I got hired by somebody and then so on and so on, and I started teaching. Okay, so pursuit and conflict are intertwined. Couple steps toward the goal, couple obstacles you overcome. Step five, and this should be simple, it's the climax, just like in a movie. But when you, whatever the climax is, it's the moment you achieve the goal you announced it in response to that crisis. That's why it needs to be vivid. So I said the goal was his daughter wanted him to walk down the aisle. And the climax was not, and his arthritis went away. The climax was he's walking his daughter down the aisle. It sounds sort of idiotic, but that's missing from so many stories. An announcement of the goal, and the moment of success when you or your hero achieve that goal. And a picture, you're creating a movie in the mind of your audience that they can see what that moment was like. Okay? But now, yeah. One more, and that's it. Sixth, and this is also missing a lot of times, and that is your story needs an aftermath.
Aftermath.
Aftermath. Or an epilogue, if you want to say it that way, something like that. But I call it these are just my terms for the six steps. The aftermath is you need to paint one more picture. You need to say one more thing, and that is, what is now the new life that you are able to live, or were able to live, or your client is able to live as a result of that? I didn't give an aftermath to the arthritis story that I just made up, but an aftermath would be, and after he was able to walk her down the aisle because of my process for arthritis, he's now back to playing tennis once a week and able to whatever he wasn't able to do when you set it up with how he was suffering from that. So like in the internet marketing world, the aftermath is going to be, or oftentimes it's going to be, and since then, I've been able to make $100,000 a month with my thing. It's just, it's a picture of where that character is now, or where they were after accomplishing the specific goal. And that aftermath should be something your audience dreams of experiencing. Not specifically. You might, if it's a group that wants to find out how to have more, make more money, then it might be the aftermath. And now his He's no longer renting a house. He and his family are living in this beautiful home on the beach, or they're on a yacht or, that they own, or whatever it is. Or now, a lot, like one of the big obstacles in a lot of I hate my job things is not enough time to spend with their kids. So the aftermath would be, and now he never misses his son's baseball game or whatever.
Oh, and that's okay. Very specific, instead of getting to spend more time.
Yeah. Everything is as vivid and specific as you can. And this probably comes from my love of movies and my being immersed for 40 years in the Hollywood. And that is, you're actually, if you're creating a story, you're actually a screenwriter. You're creating a movie in the mind of your audience or the mind of your reader. Because, by the way, the story I'm talking about, they would be stories you could use from the stage. But if you're writing a book, those would be the same stories that illustrate the chapters of the book. So these are, once you've got a good story, you can use it all over the place. But you're creating a movie in the mind of your reader or your audience. You're transporting them. They want to be in the story, not just find it interesting. It's the same way when you go to pick your favorite movie, whatever it would be. So let's say Avatar.
Oh, Top Gun is right on the list. Top Gun. Just watched it. Okay. Top Gun.
Okay. In fact, you could take either one of them. I think the second one is much better than the first
one. Personally, but some people. What's the second one?
Maverick. Top Gun Maverick.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I just watched that. Literally.
Yeah. Okay. Here you go. Okay. I bet anything, wherever you watched it, if you went to it in a movie theater or saw it on your TV, when he's flying that jet, I swear you weren't sitting there thinking, that's interesting. I wonder if I should make dinner now.
Because you were riveted.
Movies are experiential. It's what I learned when I was 6 years old. I didn't know how or why, but I wanted to be in that movie. That's what movies do. That's what stories do. When I say they transport us, because when I make presentations, a lot of time I'll show a movie clip. And like when I did something, last year for Russell Brunson, he wanted me to come and speak to one of his mastermind groups. And I said, okay, here's what I want you to do. You're going to give the introduction for me, but you're not going to bring me on stage. Do the introduction. And because I've worked with him and he's been great and we're friends and so on, introduce me, but then say, and Michael will be on stage in a minute, but first we want you to watch this 10-minute clip. And I get to do that because I'm a movie guy and I'm going to talk about that, but it's amazing because now I don't need to grab the audience. They're already involved. I can just come in the foil, as you said, in the wake of their emotional involvement, I walk on stage. And then the first thing I say is, how many of you forgot that you were in this seminar because you were involved with HIT or Good Will Hunting or whatever it was? And everybody was.
Michael, first of all, where is that clip? And you need to give me that link so I can share that with my audience.
Which clip are you?
One that you showed to Russell Brunson's group.
Okay. Well, I use a variety of clips, but in that case, it was close to the very opening after the credit prologue. It was the opening scene of Hitch, because I was going to talk about that. And okay, now I have to tell you the rest of the story. I know we've probably gone three interviews worth, but you can cut out the fluff and this. But here's the rest of the Will Smith story. So Tracy calls and said, "Will you do this?" So I say sure, and we set up. He wants to talk to me about I Am Legend. Okay, so I read the script and I read it twice, and I've got the things I want to share with him and so on. Never met him before. This will be the first time. And it's set like 7 in the evening on Friday. So I've had a few days to do it. And then we set up a meeting for me to talk to him while he's in Toronto. Okay, now here's something about, I was not just nervous, I was scared shitless. There's no two ways about it. Because, oh, and I am starstruck. And I mean, this is, at that time, he was far and away the biggest movie star in the world. And so what I did, I made a big mistake. And that is, the call was at 7. So I sat down at 6:30. So I'd be ready. And there's nothing to do but get scared. It was a stupid, I should have just watched a movie or something until 5 minutes. Okay. So I was very nervous. So he gets on the phone. And he's a great guy. I loved working with him. I really like him immensely. And he's very gracious. And he was, hi, great to meet you. It's nice. And so on. We did that intro thing. And I said, look, I know you want my input on I Am Legend, but you got to let me do the star thing first. And he said, okay. And so I said, I just want to tell you, Hitch is one of my all-time favorite movies. In fact, I said, I've lectured all over the place using it as an example of what I consider to be a perfectly structured romantic comedy, because it hits all the beats of what a romantic comedy should do. And he said, I should probably tell you that the whole time we were developing the screenplay for Hitch, we were asking ourselves, now, are we doing what Michael Higgs said we should do and connecting these two people at the level of essence? And I thought, oh my God, I've made it. It was one of the high points of my career, because I'd never had an experience where a movie I lectured about, it turned out, was working partly because the filmmakers had followed my suggestion on how you structure or how you create that inner journey thing.
That certainly is validating of your process and what you do. And we should talk about that, you know, because you have, I love this, you have the Hollywood story selling masterclass, and you do one-on-one coaching as well. What kind of person is this masterclass built for?
It's designed specifically for people, not exclusively, but basically I created it for the business arena, for entrepreneurs, for public speakers, for business leaders or thought leaders or authors. But the category is people who do not get paid directly for their stories, as opposed to screenwriters and novelists. Now, screenwriters can benefit from it, because what I put into this is, it's really everything I know or knew at the time, still pretty much everything I know about how you apply Hollywood story principles to business stories or to speaker Brilliant. Stories and so on. So that's the thing. Now, there are screenwriters who get it because it's filled with Hollywood story principles, because there's all, those are the examples and so on. And it's filled, I use clips from a lot of movies, also clips of public speakers who are in the business arena and so on. But that's, it's designed to give you a permanent idea and exercises and so on to go through and to use in part or in total every time you have a new story you need to tell, every time you have a new speech, or if you've got a book, you need a story for every chapter or things like that.
So tell me, if someone were to take this masterclass or do one-on-one coaching with you, if they take the masterclass, what are they going to walk away with? And if someone worked with you, give me a kind of behind the scenes peek at your one-on-one coach. What happens when someone sits down with you to shape their story? If they wanted to prepare to meet with you, what would you ask them? What are they going to walk away with? And where do they start?
Okay. A lot of questions there. Okay. Oh, okay. So we'll just say you're my new client. Okay. So first of all, you would say, if you want to work with me, you would pick the package of coaching that is most appropriate. Do you have one story? Is this it? Do you want my help just finding a really good story? Or do you want my help working through the entire story? Or do you want my help working through an entire presentation, so it's filled with stories, or a book or so on? So we figure out what's your target, what's your goal with this. Let's say you have one new story that you want to give on the stage and you want to perfect it. So what you would come in with, the thing usually, depending on what you're looking for, but let's say it's that. Then we would send you like a questionnaire asking you, because I need to know the questions I need to know, that everybody needs to know if you're giving a talk, is who's your audience? You know, what? And one of the questions I always ask in the business arena that some people have more trouble with than they should, and that is, what is the problem that you're going to solve for your audience or for your reader if they're writing a book and so on? So I need to know those things. It's better if I do in advance. Now, if you already have the story in mind, I would ask questions that sort of match those six steps. But sometimes people will call, and I like to work with people as early as possible in the process. They might just say, I need to come up with a story for a speech. And so I would help them figure out what that was. But whatever it is, I would have some information about you and some sense of what you want. And then we have a Zoom call, the first Zoom call. And what I do, which is the beauty of one-on-one as opposed to a digital course, which is different, although the course comes with opportunities for group interaction or group critiques. But what I do is I just start asking questions. And they're not really canned questions. It's just, I had two clients 2 days ago on the same day. And the first question might be, okay, so where did this story come from? How'd you come up with this? Now, one of the clients was a screenwriter and one of them was public speakers. But all I need to do is I need to find where you are in your story. Not as a character, but how is this story reflective of you? What do you stand for? What do you want? What is your expertise? What are you passionate about? What is the problem your audience has? And so on. So it would be questions like that. But it's very similar to what we're doing because, you know, you didn't give me a list of questions and don't seem to be asking questions off a checklist. We're just talking. But as we're talking, you're actually asking, instinctively, you're asking questions that will find out what I'm about. And if you were coaching me on my speech as a story consultant, you need to know what I'm about in terms of what do we need to put into that story. Okay, so I start asking questions, and then we get into the nuts and bolts. Questions would then zero in on, okay, who's the hero? Where do they begin? Or if they've taken it like one of the clients I had, they started, but they were starting way too early in the person's story. They had all this, it was a personal story, it was an origin story, but they went too far back. I just said, I want to know what were you doing right before you had the crisis? And like that. And so it's questions, but then it's all recorded and transcribed. So the more we get into the questions, eventually I'm going to start challenging you or saying, okay, if your hero is this, why are we going to connect with him? Why will we empathize? Or what was a key one is, what was that turning point? What was the thing that made you change? Sometimes it's obvious. Sometimes you have to think, this is what happened to you. So I'm guiding you through the structure of the story. Then your assignment would be, okay, now I want you to go either do a revised outline of the story, if they're only that far, or I might say, okay, you're far enough along. I want you to go write the story or record yourself telling the story if you're a public speaker and you're going to be on stage. Now you come back and I say, okay, that's good. Here's what's working. Here's what's not. But now we need to make it more vivid. Now we need to make it more emotional. Now we need to, and at some point we're always going to get to, now we need to know what's the inner journey for the character. I have to take it aside, but I'll mention this. When I talk about the inner journey, the hero's journey is generally, the way I look at it is, it's a story of accomplishment. But then there's a story under that that is a story of transformation. And the arc, the transformation, is always from living in fear to living courageously. So I want to get to what was the real fear underneath what was holding you back. What is the real fear you had to overcome in order to accomplish your goal? And the reason that's so valuable is when you go that deep into your character, whether it's you or someone you're writing about, a satisfied client, when you go that deep, you get the deepest connection with your audience. Because if let's say your expertise is public speaking, and you want to talk about how you work the room or work the stage or something like that. So those are external actions you can take to do that. But if I'm coaching you on that, I'm going to say, I want to know what was the fear that held you back from becoming a public speaker? Or what did this character have to overcome? What were they afraid of? What was their protective identity telling them to keep them safe, but standing between them and what their real destiny was? Because the obstacles you face in giving a speech on the stage, they're a multitude. Or whatever, if you have a condition, or if you're trying to fall in love, there's a multitude of obstacles. We want to know what they are, but they might not be the same obstacles. But when you're talking about fear at that level, there's really only a couple. Tony Robbins says there's only really two basic fears, and that is that you won't love me and that I'm not good enough. Now, you can go deeper than that, but here's why it's important, because the external obstacles might not match the people in your audience, even if they're all trying to become speakers, they're all trying to be better entrepreneurs or learn AI or whatever it is. But the fears we have are universal. And if you get to the level of talking about the fear you had to overcome or that your hero overcame, and you tell a story where the hero does overcome that fear, then everyone in the audience has the emotional experience of becoming courageous. And my belief is they take that home, because your subconscious is experiencing that arc from fear to courage. And that's what they need when they get home. And I like to believe, and I do wholeheartedly, that the more experiences like that of becoming courageous, the more likely you are to be able to actually do that in real life.
Ah, Michael, all I got to say, I have a lot to say about this. I'm going to tell you. But before we go, I want to ask you, that was so powerful. I'm blessed to have had some incredible guests. I have been in this business for a while now and helping people overcome their fears. And I just want to tell you that the things that you shared today, the detailed game plan for how to construct a talk, how to look at it, the perspective you need to have, that was so exquisite that I cannot believe anybody that's out there isn't going to want to connect with you, because you not only bring the stuff, but you make us feel about it. You make it feel possible. You make it feel doable. You make it feel connective, but exciting too, because the whole time I felt like I was in the movies. And I'm a big movie buff, so I admit to that. I love to read and I love books, but I got to tell you, I've been a movie buff all my life. And it's so true. Everything you said is why we love the movies. And I can think of a very dear person in the business who was always saying, you've got to create it like a movie. You've got to make it a movie. And I would say, you have to tell them how to make it a movie. You can't just say that. You got to be able to give them steps so they can see it, they can feel it. You just did. I think you would be a phenomenal coach. I know you are, because I studied up on you and I think you're amazing. But the people out there, if you want to make your story interesting, if you want your ability to stand out and for people to be able to relate to you and to see it, to see what you've been through for themselves, I think you just got the best class you could have gotten. And you need to get coached by this man. So before we go, I want to ask you one more question.
First, let me say thank you. That was such a wonderful thing you said. What it made me think, I was thinking, I thank you, and so does that six-year-old boy.
Oh.
Because that's what I was totally unconscious of at the time, but that's it. That's why I said at the beginning, this is going to be fun. I didn't really know what I should have said is, this is going to be fun for me. I assumed it would for you, and I hope it was for everybody else, but that's what I'm saying. I just get really excited about it. So thank you so much for saying that. And I'd love to work with anyone hearing this who's interested in moving their story. That's what I live for. So thank you.
You've made it. That six-year-old boy, he accomplished exactly what he planned to do, and you're here, and we're grateful for it. So I want to tell you one last question, because I'm always interested to hear tell me, of all the things that you've done, the people that you've worked with, the accomplishments that you've had, and that the six-year-old boy and his goal has been accomplished, what's the legacy that you hope to leave behind in the world?
That's interesting, because I listened, I thought that might be coming, and I was trying to think, what would I say? I'll say it this way first, that from the time I started lecturing and making presentations about screenwriting, because that's where I started, and I started with one at UCLA Extension, and then I started traveling around the country, and then I've been other places in the world and so on, but probably the thing I enjoyed hearing most, or felt happiest about hearing, was when somebody came up and their response was, I'm going to write great scripts or any of that. It's when they said, I'm never going to look at movies the same way again. And to me, it was like, wow, that's so cool. And I think in a way that would be it. If to know that I had helped people see stories and storytelling in a different way, to see that there's more than just the plot of a movie, and there's more than just the information in a story. It's being able to see what's underneath all that and see, and I'll end this, I think it's conveying it, but I got to be interviewed by once with Will Smith. So the two of us were interviewed together. And the moderator said, Will, why do you think storytelling is so important? And he said, because stories help us live better. And I thought, Will was a lot pithier and more succinct than I've ever been able to be. But I thought, that's right. That's what stories do. They help us live better. So that would be it.
I love that. It's the perfect place to end this interview. I want to thank you, Michael, for being here and really giving us such a sharp, eye-opening look into the real mechanics of storytelling. I mean, you really broke it down detail by detail. People will look at stories differently now, and it'll be tied to film, which brings it home. I don't think I can trust anybody who doesn't like movies.
Okay. All right. By the way, you may be going to say this anyway, but I want to, because those six steps, there's going to be a link under this somewhere, I know. And if people do the link, then we're going to give them, there's a freebie, a chart of those six steps. So you don't have to remember just what I said. And it says those set up crisis and so on with an explanation. So it's all there and you can just have that. So I want to make sure people know they're going to get more about the six steps from that than just what I was able to share. So
it's so generous. It's people sometimes hold on to their stuff and they want to sell their course. But you know what? Working with a great coach, anybody who accomplished anything of magnitude, whether you're a world-class athlete or you're the greatest actor in the world, every one of those people will tell you they had a coach that helped them get there. You can read up all you want on things. You can shop the internet all day long. You can get an incredible amount of information. But having a one-on-one coach with you that's specific to you and is helping you accomplish those goals, you'll get there faster. You'll get there higher. You'll accomplish so much more. And I believe in that. My parents are coaches. My family has a lot of coaches in sports and in equestrian and in volleyball. That's a really big deal. My dad's an Olympic coach, was an Olympic coach. We believe in that. So having coaches on here, they're changing the world in what they do. So I would suggest you really want to check out Michael Haig, because storytelling works in every business. It works in every avenue. That's our cultural background. That's who we are. We learn from stories. We remember because of stories. The facts are irrelevant. The stories are what lock it in. So thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you. And I had so much fun. You're just such a great interviewer. And we went some fun places with it. So thank you for having me. It was really cool. Thank you.
It's just a privilege. It's just a privilege to have had you too. I think our audience I hope they got so much out of this. And please let us know. You didn't just talk about story. You really showed us how to build out the story, why it matters in business, in leadership. and really how we connect with people, which is with everything we do, that's the essential element, is being able to successfully connect with people. I got it. There are so many takeaways on this. I want the audience to know that I'm a kinesthetic learner. So I always have a pad next to me and I'm always making notes, even though I have the interview. I can go back and pull a transcript from this, but I will take notes along the way. I have 5 pages here because it was so powerful. And I really got it that emotion beats logic every time. You know, if you're trying to influence and inspire or sell people, you better start with the heart. And your story isn't about a resume. It's about that transformation. And a story is what takes people with you. That's what people remember. That's what drives action. So if you want more of what Michael brings to the world in film or business, you know, head over to HollywoodStorySelling.com. You can grab his books, The Storytelling Made Easy, Selling Your Story in 60 Seconds, and he's got the newly updated Writing Screenplays That Sell, the 20th Anniversary Edition. It's on Amazon. And really, I suggest you better read them, mark them up, use them like it's the workshop, like it's the workbook, like it's the Bible you need. They're truly master tools for anyone who's serious about message, influence, and impact. And if you're ready to work with Michael, and I guess the Michael Haig, you can check out his Hollywood Story Selling Masterclass or apply for one-on-one coaching. This is really your chance to learn the same frameworks that are used by A-list actors and major studios and eight-figure business owners. So don't sleep on it. Get involved with him. As you can see, he's very meaty and substantive and great at telling a story that keeps you engaged. This is a long interview. You guys, this is an hour and 45 minutes? And I'm not done. If I didn't have somebody after him, we'd still be talking. So he's really also a walking case study in the power of public speaking. Look what you've got today. And it's an intimate platform called a podcast. And really, it's just a conversation. If you're afraid of speaking on a big stage, don't worry about it. You can have this well done. Will let people get to know you better than any other platform. And he's really showed us. He doesn't just use it. He teaches it in a way that makes you better. So not more polished, more true. And that's what turns messages into movements. Michael, again, I can't thank you enough. To our listeners, if this conversation got you thinking or got you fired up, please do us a favor. Like, share it, or subscribe it because it makes a difference. Drop us a comment. Let us know what landed. Every bit of that feedback, it really helps us grow this show and bring more quality and high-value, no-fluff insight straight to your ears. Really, it's available 24 hours a day. And you got to have Michael for an hour and a half. If that didn't make a difference in your perspective on public speaking, that you can do this and you can do it better, and that it's not only a skill to get, but that there's a framework here that will work for you. And it's been successful for some pretty high level people that use it and built their films on it. That's the credibility. So here at the Spotlight, you know, we're here to spotlight how public speaking done right can really transform your business and your brand and your bottom line. Not because it's trend, because it's a tool. It's one of the most powerful ones you have. It's your voice. And I might remind you, it's free. You have a voice. It can really serve you in the world. So thank you again, Michael, for being with us and to everybody tuning in. And as always, I look forward to our next conversation. See you next.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight. We hope you enjoyed this deep dive once again into the remarkable stories and insights of our incredible guests. Their experiences and hard-earned, time-tested wisdom are not just meant to inspire you, but to provide you with actionable steps to take on your own path to success. Remember, you have a story to tell, and your voice has the power to transform your business and make lasting impact. And that's what it's all about. If you found value in today's episode, let us know. And I hope you'll take a moment and subscribe to The Spotlight wherever you listen to your podcasts so you never miss a thought-provoking or idea-producing conversation. I'm Kelly O'Hara, and I can't wait to see you back here for the next episode of the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight.